Welcome to the Movement Prescription Podcast. My name's Hussein, and I'll be your host for today. Today's episode is pretty special. It's with someone that means a lot to me because she's a work colleague, mainly because she is an idol in both sport and health and well-being, Chrissy Wellington. From a sporting perspective, she has achieved the highest accolades there is. Four-time Ironman world champion. Redefined the sport, in my opinion, from when she burst on the scene, winning Ironman Korea in 2007. But she's a true champion both on and off the racetrack. And she's always measured her success in her athletic career by the positive impact that it has on larger causes. And her role in Parkrun as the health and well-being lead in globally previously, but now in the UK, is testament to just how important it is for her to allow others to see the benefits of physical activity. And we're going to be talking about Parkrun, a huge social prescribing initiative that is celebrating its 20th year this year, ever since Paul set up that run in Bushy Fields. And we're going to be talking about how the Royal College of GPs have set up the Parkrun Practice Initiative, but that it's far wider than that for other healthcare professionals to utilise Parkrun for the incredible benefits that it brings, both to the individual, but to the wider community. We're going to be dispelling myths around Parkrun and how people can connect with it, whether that be volunteering, spectating, walking, or running. And Chrissy's also going to share some really telling insights of what it's like to redefine physical activity, going from being right at the forefront of her sport to having a new relationship in her retirement. I hope you enjoy it. And I hope it will inspire you to go to your park run this Saturday or Sunday. Enjoy. Hello and welcome, Chrissy, to the Movement Prescription Podcast. It's great to have you.
Great to be on. Thank you so much for inviting me.
You know, in your own words, we'd love to know what has been your personal journey when it comes to movement.
I've kind of had different kind of experiences of being active, of moving, of sport in different stages in my life. I think there have been different incarnations. Maybe that's the same for everyone. So as a young person, I was relatively active. And I was a member of the school swimming team. But I didn't invest that much energy and in trying to fulfill my potential, my sporting potential. I was always very much focused on kind of academic excellence, but always really enjoyed being active. And it's something that my parents encouraged and gave me the opportunity to try lots of different things. And for that, I'm so incredibly grateful. And I kind of fell off the activity bandwagon, Hussein, as many people do, you know, in my teenage years, around 16 or 17, and at university, again, wasn't that active, prioritized academia and my social life. Not that doing sport and having a social life were incompatible, and really only resurrected my love for activity when I was doing my master's. And in all honesty, I needed something to channel my energy into that wasn't academia. I needed a respite from the academic pressures that I was placing on myself. So really, I think there was a mental health imperative at that stage.
And you mentioned that it was something that kind of was maybe less of a priority as you entered sort of A-levels and university kind of years. And that's something that I think a lot of people listening will resonate. Definitely for me as well, you know, going through medical school, it was sort of all consuming and sort of self-care even, let alone physical activity, can sometimes be pushed to one side, particularly with many of the jobs that we do now. And you mentioned that physical activity, you went back to it from a mental health perspective. Is that because you had gained the benefits already when you were younger and you're reconnecting with that? Or was it something that you rediscovered that it helped you from a mental side?
I think I rediscovered it. I especially needed the kind of like the mental health benefits of being active at that stage in life, which certainly wasn't something that I was conscious of as a young person, but was very, very conscious of in my mid-20s, and placed a lot of pressure on myself academically. So I definitely needed that, of, you know, that channel, and you know, activity, which was power walking initially, and then running. And that's really where I first cut my teeth in endurance sports, was, you know, starting off walking, then walking, running, then running a bit more, and then inspired by a friend that had grown up with a heart defect, had run the London Marathon. I entered the London Marathon, got a charity place. And yeah, that's really my kind of, I guess how I first entered endurance sports and realized that A, it was something that I enjoyed, and then B, that I had a talent that maybe I'd hitherto not explored.
You said that you started initially with power walking. Now, when you started that, did you envisage that you wanted to go further? Like, was that always the plan, that this was a stepping stone, or was this just the movement that you wanted to do at that time?
I think that was the form of movement that felt accessible to me at that time. And goal setting, I think, for all of us is iterative. I think we take that first step, whatever that first step might be, you know, off the couch, doing a 5K, you know, starting for me, you know, Nordic walking. And I didn't know where that would lead, but I think sometimes you don't need to know where that would lead, because you start with that very first difficult step, and it opens up, you know, a world of opportunity. And I certainly started to realize the benefits quite quickly, and obviously that compels you to do more and to make it a much more kind of regular, habitual part of your life. But it certainly wasn't always that way.
From that London Marathon attempt, you know, things definitely escalated, I think is probably the best way of putting it. And I know you'll never admit it, but you became an absolute great of your sport in long distance triathlon. But if I fast forward to now, what role does movement play now that you're not, you know, competing at the highest level, and you don't have the fans screaming at you, and you aren't picking up awards? Is it still as beneficial?
I think throughout our life, the kind of motivational triggers that compel us to adopt a certain lifestyle change. So as a professional athlete, you know, the motivational, drivers were different from what they are now, admittedly. But ultimately, I now love to move, and I feel that's necessary not only for my physical health but also my own mental health. So whilst I still have sporting goals, I still like to set myself challenges. For me, it's so much more. You know, it's an opportunity to connect more deeply with myself. It's where I think I'm often my most creative. It's an opportunity to connect with my environment. I'm so fortunate to live in a beautiful part of, you know, the country, if not the world, and really being able to be embedded through that, through my kind of chosen sport of running is really important to me. And it gives me an opportunity to connect with others. And that's equally as important. So I think underpinning it all is that kind of deeper connection with oneself and with one's environment. And my physical health and my mental health definitely benefit from me integrating movement into my daily life. But I think I have a much more balanced approach to being active than I probably did as a professional athlete. It's definitely not as all-consuming.
I can only imagine. So let me pose a question to you, because I've had a few patients that in their younger years, they were, okay, maybe not at your level, but were very high-performing cyclists, runners, swimmers, anything. But they don't move anymore. And one of the key reasons they say that they don't is because they get demoralized that they cannot do what they used to be able to do, either in time, distance, whatever. And they just associated the movement with the reward of the result. And I find it quite difficult because I often think, oh, this consultation is going to be easy. You know, this person used to run for the county, used to do, you know, X, Y, Z, but they're just not engaged anymore. Like, how did you keep up that engagement despite no longer doing, you know, the times that you used to do?
Because the measures of success are different. So I have to see success in a much more spacious sense. Like, life is a series of incarnations, and our priorities change, our lifestyle changes, our commitments and our obligations change. And there was a time where my life was wholly anchored around being a professional athlete. And success was a kind of very narrow set of metrics. And now for me, I have to expand that and see, you know, success in a sporting context, in an activity context, a lot more spaciously. So for me, I'm not necessarily aspiring to achieve a certain time or a certain position, and my sense of self-validation doesn't necessarily come from that. There's a lot more satisfaction that comes from, like I said, that feeling of connection or being able to be a role model to our, you know, to be a role model to our daughter, and also to challenge myself in different ways. And I think that was important to me, Hussein, that I achieved, and I'm very privileged to be able to have achieved a lot in the sport of triathlon. But I knew, I think, for my own mental health, I needed to move away from that and to set new challenges that were outside of that kind of frame of reference, because that provided the barometer which I was measured against. So for me, like, segueing into kind of off-road running, something that I'm not particularly talented or skilled at, but I really enjoy, was really, really important because it was a new challenge and a new venture. So I think that's important for people, no matter what stage, that they're seeking new challenges, seeking new opportunities to test themselves in different ways. So I think that's certainly helped to kind of keep that fire ignited, but ultimately also be kind to myself. I will never be the athlete that I was 10 years ago, but nor should I aspire to be, because I've got balance in my life now, and I'm achieving things in and out of sport that I simply wasn't able to when I was a professional athlete. So being accepting of that and being kind to myself has been really important too.
I think those are really good points. And when we're communicating with patients, I think some of those things that you said, whether it be ensuring that you have new metrics for measuring, you know, the success or the work that you're putting in, even thinking about new modalities of movement. You know, if someone lived and breathed swimming and they've just attached so much to the specific times and distances, you know, discuss what else are they interested in? You know, do they have other passions of movement? And having the stages of life, you know, we all have the different phases of life where we, doesn't make us a worse athlete just because the watch is telling us something. We can be better athletes just in other ways.
Absolutely. And I also think back, Hussein, to times as an athlete when I was injured, and you can be cup half full, cup half empty. And I always try to reframe that injury through the lens of optimism and positivity. So yes, I couldn't run, for example, but what could I do? If you can't run, what can you do? Well, I could start to write my autobiography. I could spend more time with my family and friends. I could invest time in strength and conditioning work. So there were things that I could do when I couldn't do something else. So I always try and focus on what is possible and what I am able to do.
Reframing positively, I think it's a yeah, powerful absolutely. Technique, isn't it? And it's actually something that we should try to encourage and facilitate our patients to do. You know, reframing is such an important element of a consultation. Brilliant. Well, one of the things that you did move on to do is work with Park Run. And I'd love you to tell our listeners that haven't heard of Park Run, which I don't think will be many, just, you know, what's your role and a bit about what is Park Run?
So I was so fortunate to start working for Park Run 10 years ago now, 2013, I first came on board with Park Run. So Park Run is a global charity that is actually celebrating its 20th anniversary next year, which is quite a seminal moment and an opportunity to reflect on how far the organization has come. So it started off with one event in Bushey Park in London. We now have about 2,200 events in 22 countries around the world. So Park Run is a global charity, delivers actually two types of event. We've got the 5 kilometer events that take place weekly and on a Saturday morning. And we've got the junior Park Run events that are specifically for 4 to 14-year-olds and their families and are held on Sunday morning. The events deliberately remove or minimize as many barriers to participation as possible, including costs. So all the events are absolutely free to take part in. You just register once on the Park Run website and you can come down and participate. And when I say participate, people can walk, they can jog, they can run, or they can volunteer in a range of different roles.
Yeah, like it's an initiative that I think snowballed is probably the best way to describe it. From that sort of that, how many? I think was it 15 people that came to the first ever sort of Bushey Parks or 5 kilometers? Because it wasn't called a park run at the beginning, was it?
No, it was Bushey Park Time Trial, spoke to the fact that the majority of people were runners at that time. So what started off as what we call the 13 Park Run Pioneers, we now have 9 million registered park runners globally. Every weekend, about 300,000 people take part globally. So here in the UK, about 180,000 people take part in this free, community-delivered, volunteer-led public health initiative. And it's really phenomenal to see how it's grown and expanded, Hussein, to engage so many more people and people that are taking their first steps to healthy, active lifestyles. And I go back to what we were talking about earlier, and what's so incredibly important is connection. And I think Park Run provides the opportunity for people to connect with each other at a time when we're struggling with disconnect and lack of social cohesion, the opportunity to reconnect not only with yourself, but with others and with your community and with your environment is really, really important.
What was the first park run you ever went to?
The first park run was Richmond.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've done that one. That's a nice park one.
And yeah, it's lovely. All kind of on trail in, you know, beautiful Richmond Park in London.
Yeah, that's a great event. My first one was in Leamington, which is near where I worked because of the initiative that we joined, the Parkrun Practice Initiative, which is we'll speak to in just a moment. But for me, like, I think what I will always thank and remember Parkrun for was that it kind of kicked my own health and well-being journey. Because at the time I was, you know, struggling with stress, with my weight. I'd recently been diagnosed with fatty liver disease. And if it was not for a meeting that was held at the practice where the local Parkrun team had come in to deliver a 45-minute session to all the staff, and my practice manager and the senior partner, Dr. Fulbrook, they were keen park runners. In fact, Dr. Fulbrook had gone to the first ever one that happened in Leamington, which was near the sort of top of the ones that started in the UK. And just hearing them talk about the event and the amount of, you know, the impact that it had on them and how much they loved it, I kind of was sort of hesitant, thinking, "Oh, maybe, you know, maybe I should go," because they'd encouraged all the staff to come to the next park run, just to get a bit of a flavour of it. And luckily, my wife, who was a runner at a time but had never done park run before, said, "Okay, you know, let's go. I'll come with you, and we'll do it." And you know, I turned up. I didn't have any trainers, Chrissy. I turned up in just standard shoes and just some jogging bottoms. And, you know, I did the 5 kilometers, but I'm not sure if I was fully conscious for most of it because I was that unfit. Like it was such a difficult experience, but I left it feeling energized because the volunteers were amazing. You know, at each of the marshal points, they would just be like, you know, "You can do this, keep going, you know, take your time." And I was walking plenty of it, of course. And then to see the staff at the end being so supportive, in particular Stephen and John, you know, the practice manager and the senior partner. And although it was such a difficult physical experience, it was an amazing mental experience that I knew that I had to come back, and it helped me to get fitter and to get more active. And I'm, you know, just so grateful for it.
It's a great personal story that's replicated you know, the world over. But, you know, just listening to you speak, it, you know, I think it touches on the misconceptions sometimes about what parkrun is. You know, is it a race? Am I going to have to run? I've never been a runner before. I haven't got trainers. I guess what you realize very quickly, and we like to encourage people to come and just see a parkrun for themselves, is that it really doesn't matter. You don't have to complete the 5K if you don't want to. You can also come along and volunteer, and volunteering is a valued form of participation, which means you're being active, you're connecting, you're outside. So, but that speaks to, I think, the, you know, the misconceptions or the misunderstandings sometimes about what parkrun is, which, you know, we would like to address. But then, yeah, some of the very real barriers that people face, the practical barriers, of course, but also the psychological barriers. You know, are people going to judge me? I'm not fit enough to do this. And they're very, very real kind of hurdles for people to overcome. And I think that's where the support of the parkrun community, you mentioned, you know, your practice staff, encouraging you to come down and taking your very first steps. And I think once you've taken that very first, often difficult step, you realize that actually it is something that I can do. It is an opportunity that is open to me. And, you know, as with my kind of story that I went through previously, you never know where that might lead. And look where, you know, it's led you
up to about, I own about 12 different pairs of trainers, so just from that alone I've gone from not having any to way too many. But yeah, no, like it's, I think that's kind of a role that us as healthcare professionals can be. We can help to remove some of those barriers, because yeah, I was nervous about going for the first time. And if it wasn't for, you know, the parkrun staff coming down, my wife, you know, the practice manager, all these people just helping me and saying, it's fine. You know, you can walk as much as you like. You don't even have to finish it. Just come and have a look. They helped break down those barriers. And so when we're thinking about signposting patients to these events, we have to acknowledge and explore the barriers. Always just find out honestly, rather than just automatically going in and outlining how there are, you know, we can break down this barrier. Just find out what are the individual's barriers, because often it's very different from person to person what it is that may be stopping them. So just exploring that is just so important.
And the motivational triggers equally, because yes, those hurdles are very real, but there must also be that, you know, kind of interest.
Yeah, the pull.
You know, that you can then ignite, you know, that kind of simmering flame that you can then, that you as healthcare professionals can then fuel. Parkrun has grown to 9 million registered participants, largely through word of mouth, but that word of mouth often stops where we need it most. And as a public health charity focused on improving health and well-being, we would like to empower healthcare professionals to be able to advocate for Parkrun as an incredible space for people to achieve their own personal health and well-being objective, whatever that may be. So for you, maybe it was fitness, maybe it was around weight loss, maybe it was, you know, managing your risk of fatty liver disease, whatever that might be. But Parkrun creates that space for people to improve their health and well-being. And we would like to empower healthcare professionals to be able to advocate for that and to see it as an incredible community asset that they can leverage in pursuit of their own objectives. And not only that, take part themselves.
Absolutely. Like 100%, the patient across from you will know whether you've been to an event or not. Even if you don't mention it, they will know. And like one of the things that I can tell is that in my own practice, when I compare the GPs that have never been and are trying to encourage patients to go to the ones that have, the success rate is vastly different, you know, vastly different. And because it's authentic, you know, if you've gone, you've gained the benefits. When you speak about it, the patient can tell that authenticity. And, you know, if people are listening to this and are thinking, okay, you know, I'm engaged, you know, I want to support my patients to get more active. And I know that we touched on the fact that it isn't just walking and jogging, you know, it is very much also spectating and volunteering. And if I just touch on volunteering, I was at Kingsbury Water Park Parkrun this Saturday, and there was a lady there, Sue, who had done 180 volunteers at that same parkrun.
Yeah.
And I asked her, I said, you know, like 108, like why? I was just like, why so many? Just out of interest. I know that it's brilliant, but like why? And she said that it is the highlight of her week. You know, seeing similar faces, seeing new faces, finding out where they've come from, you know, being engaged with her community. She was in her sort of mid-70s. She goes, it just makes me feel young because I'm meeting people, I'm chatting to people of all ages. I'm going to the cafe afterwards. It's totally fun. I think that's what we got to remember. Like, for sure, the physical activity is brilliant, and this is the Movement Prescription Podcast, but real movement, you can gain the benefits in just being around those activities and connecting with the volunteering of it.
In volunteering, you are being active, and we know through research that volunteering can be as impactful to your health and well-being as walking and running, if not more. And the anecdote you shared again is replicated the world over. You know, I remember a gentleman called John up at Southport Parkrun, and he tragically lost his wife and was becoming increasingly isolated and disconnected, and his daughter was really worried about him and encouraged him to come along to Parkrun not to walk, not to jog, not to run, but to volunteer. And that gave him the sense of purpose and the connection with the community that he so needed. The woman that you mentioned, he's now a regular participant, and it's such an important part of his week. And we have a woman say, Elizabeth Maris, that she's in a care home next to Bushy Park in London, and her carers wheel her down in her wheelchair to Bushy Park every Saturday, and she sits on the corner and she claps everyone, high fives people as they go past, and she's been given the title Honorary Marshal as a result of, you know, the contribution that she's made. But again, it just shows how uplifting it can be and how you can participate in a range of a range of different ways in a way that, you know, that suits the individual.
There's nothing more sort of connecting for a community than volunteering and supporting other people for the sake of that. You know, in lots of research in longevity medicine, where we try to understand how to live healthier for longer, you know, don't get me wrong, nutrition is really important, physical activity is really important. But they found that the most influential factor was community, and how connected you are with your community indicated the likelihood of good health for longer. And I think that's why it's so important that we don't have a certain picture of who we would signpost to parkrun. There really is no person that I wouldn't feel wouldn't benefit from engaging with parkrun, whether it be a patient that wants to physically improve their health, maybe type 2 diabetes, or someone struggling with stress or mental health difficulties that needs the outlet of movement and that connection with nature, or that lonely patient that you've gone on a home visit and is not meeting people and wants to connect. You know, and I think what comes is really important is we need to sell parkrun in a different way to those different people. You know, you need to leverage the different elements that parkrun brings in order to motivate that particular person.
Absolutely. And likewise with people on different stages of their activity or health journey, also different ages, different demographic groups. So parkrun is open to all. You can participate at any age. You can encourage intergenerational participation with families if that's something that you think might appeal. Obviously childcare is an issue for, you know, for patients that are parents. So that could be an opportunity to reconnect as a family. And I think it's also worth noting, Hussein, that it's not only GPs that can signpost, you know, any kind of healthcare professional is able to advocate for parkrun. So whether it's the practice managers or nurses, obviously the link workers and community navigators, receptionists, all can be kind of drum bangers for parkrun. And we'd encourage staff across primary care secondary care and tertiary care to come along and to take part for themselves so they can see what it's all about, and hopefully reap the benefits to their health and well-being as well as that of their patients.
Yeah, don't trust us. Find out for yourself, you know, and I'm sure you guys will be advocates as well. Now, let's say a physio is listening to this and they're going, do you know what? Yeah, I'm game. I work at a practice. I want to signpost patients. Practically, how do they now go about that? You know, that they've been motivated to jump on the cause. How can they go about doing just that?
So 5 or 6 years ago, we became aware that healthcare professionals were signposting patients to parkrun. In fact, some practices actually went one step further and realized there was a need for a parkrun event within their community and actually set one up. So in 2018, together with the Royal College of GPs, we kind of formalized that relationship between the practice and the parkrun event as the Park Run Practice Initiative. And that essentially at the local level and the national level is a collaboration which, like I said, connects primary care with Park Run. So there is a website, the Park Run Practice website that people can go to. And that, in answer to your question, provides a range of resources for healthcare professionals to be able to signpost to Parkrun. So there are patient cards that can be handed out, there are posters, there are flyers, there are videos that can be uploaded to the, you know, to the TV screens. Yeah. There are posters that can be put on notice boards, for example. So all of the assets and resources are available via the website. But what I'd recommend first and foremost is for staff to come down and take part themselves. Because I, like I said, there's nothing like firsthand experience to enable you to be a positive and compelling advocate. And really try and, you know, consider Park Run when you're having conversations with patients. And if you feel like that spark is there for them to be more connected, to be more active, to want to be outdoors, then think of Park Run within that kind of library of different community assets that you might signpost to. Think of Park Run and potentially mention that to the patient. So I think using the resources, using the assets, and thinking of Park Run whenever you're speaking to patients that might be taking those steps towards a healthy and active lifestyle.
Fantastic. And how many Park Run practices are there at the moment?
Number are growing day by day, so it'll probably be out of date by the time the podcast is published. About 1,850 at last count, so about 20% of all practices across the UK are Park Run practices, which I think really shows an incredible appetite for utilising community assets for the health and well-being benefit of whole communities. I think there's a desperate need for us now to not only manage kind of long-term health conditions, but also to take a more preventative approach. And I think that this initiative really is a great example of a social prescribing project that connects primary care to a free and accessible intervention like Park Run.
You know, it is not labour intensive. It is quite simple. It's just all about just putting it in your tools, in your armoury for those patients to have as an option. And it's fantastic. We have all those ways of promoting it, whether it be on social media, on the TV screens, as you said, but when the patient's in front of us or on the phone, these are sometimes the best interactions to have because you can really kind of connect it with whatever the patient's trying to achieve. And it's about framing it in that way. Now, for practices that aren't yet Parkrun practices, like we'll add a link to the resources that Chrissy has just mentioned, as well as the Parkrun Practice website, which was recently updated, at the end of 2023. And here you can very simply outline that you've become a Parkrun practice. But what's really important is that you engage with your local event, that you make some tangible changes, and that you make sure that you're working together. Because it's a two-team thing, isn't it? It's not just the practice that's getting involved in this. It's the Park Run event themselves. Any tips for how best to approach the Park Run event?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is a collaboration, and what we're trying to do is create whole communities centered on wellness. And at the heart of this, like you said, it's a connection between that Park Run event and the local practice. And you might have a number of Park Run events around your practice or in your practice catchment area, and it's fine to link with multiple Park Run events. So what I would do is go on the Park Run website, click on the tab events, and you can kind of zoom in on your local area and find the events that are closest to you. If you click on the icon for that event, it will bring up the event website. You can look at the event website, look at where the location is, look at where the meeting point is for the park run, and then it will also give you the contact details for the event team. Now, the events are all delivered by volunteers, so it's important to be really mindful of that, but reach out to the event team and just, open up the channels of communication. Say, I'm X, Y, and Z from this practice. We're really keen to connect with you to explore how we might become a park run practice. Perhaps we could meet you on a Saturday morning. We can have a coffee after the park run event, or you can equally invite them to come into the practice. They may or may not have time, but like you said, Hussein, the team from your local event came in, delivered a presentation. So that might be another opportunity to connect with the event team. But I think at the outset, it's really important to emphasize that it's not time intensive. It's basically about signposting people to parkrun in whatever way fits with you as a practice. You can do as much or as little as you like, but parkrun is there as a space for you to encourage your colleagues, your staff members to take part in, and also your patients.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of it. You can do a whole range of things based on your time commitments and sort of workload. I would definitely advocate the sort of higher commitment, because what we found by really engaging heavily with our local events and with the teams, not only have we sort of gained kind of friends, we know them so well, the people that run our Leamington Park Run, and we've gained so much as a practice, like reputationally. Mm-hmm. Like most of our patients know about it, and they're so proud of what we do from that side. And it really helps, because when your patients are happy with you, it makes delivering care a lot easier. So I would really advocate trying to, get stuck in and use parkrun for the most that you can. And one thing that we've done, and again, this is totally optional, you don't need to do this to be a parkrun practice, but we've sort of created a group where we can facilitate people that don't feel yet confident to go to an event on their own. And they will meet up with the social prescribing team and go for walks or very light jogs, where we can go around the course. We sort of, recce it. We say, look, this is where we meet up. This is where we finish. This is where, you can park your car if you wanted to. But we always try to encourage them to walk or cycle to the event. And we found that that's been really successful. And we put a little flag for the practice near the start. So therefore, people know that they can go to that flag and there'll be someone there from either the staff or one of the patient champions that will be able to be there with them. Because we know that some people don't want to go to a big event of 300-400 people and not know anyone and sort of just stand there on their own. So things like this can just kind of help.
Yeah, some events can be more intimate as well, so if there are a number of events around you and a patient might struggle in an environment where there are hundreds of people, perhaps you can signpost them to a smaller event. But absolutely, there are many opportunities for the practice of being a parkrun practice reputationally, health and well-being of patients, meeting certain, assessment criteria. Obviously it might tick that box. And there are also opportunities for the practice, like you do, to promote the services that it provides to the parkrun community, being down at the parkrun and making the parkrun community aware of what your practice is doing and the services it provides, can be really, really, really beneficial for the practice. And just to touch on what you said before about kind of having a lead-in time or program, I think that can be really, really important. And we have a lot of examples of practices that have potentially delivered Couch to 5K programs, with the graduation being a parkrun event. So that might work for some practices too. Obviously, there's no obligation to do that, but being able to deliver a program like a run walk program initially to prepare people if they do find that you know, fitness, or there is a psychological barrier to taking part, that might be a useful way of segueing people from inactivity to being confident enough to take part.
Yeah. And talking about sort of intimate park runs, I went to one in Poland in Augustow, which had five people, and two of them was me and my wife. So that it doesn't get more intimate than that. And to be honest, I did ask the volunteer, I was like, you know, like having such low numbers, you know, is that a problem? And she was like, no, like, we love it. We love it still. Like the most they ever had was 15. And they were like, it's great. You know, you just get to chat to everyone. And I think that just tells you the point. It's not about how many people that are at the event. It's about what the people that go get out of the event.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think we had a record attendance at Poland.
Oh, yeah.
This weekend, actually.
I must have triggered it.
And it's phenomenal to see how it's growing outside of the UK and in South Africa, especially. Parkrun creates a really safe space for people to be active in a country where it's not always easy to go for a walk.
And they have some of the biggest runs, do they not? Like they even outnumber Bushy sometimes for some of their events.
Yes, North Beach Park Run. If you're not keen on hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of people, I'd avoid that one and go to a more quieter park run. But yeah, we get about 12% of our participants walk in South Africa, which is, you know, which is incredible.
Do you know the rough numbers for walking in the UK?
Around 4%.
Okay.
So we implemented a park walk campaign last October.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, with a special focus on encouraging people to walk and celebrating those that choose to walk. And it's part of our effort to address some of the misconceptions that we spoke about earlier. You know, with the name Park Run, there is a misconception that it's a run or even that it might be a race. And we need to work hard to make sure that, you know, those that are unfamiliar with Park Run realize that it's a place where you can come along and you can walk and you're welcome to walk, even if you never segue into jogging or running. You can come along and walk. There is always a tail walker volunteer that's the last person to finish. So you will never be last. There are also park walker volunteers at many events that are there just to, you know, support those that want to walk. And there are also first timer briefings. So if you come along, you don't know what to expect, there will always be a volunteer that's delivering a first timer briefing that can explain about the course or what happens during the event or indeed where the cafe is that everyone heads to afterwards.
Yeah. And I suspect, or this is just my opinion, I suspect there may be more walkers just because from my experience in doing many walks at Park Run, some people won't go through the finish funnel. They'll sort of come through right to the end and because they don't particularly want a token or that's not what they've done it for. So I do wonder whether there may be people that haven't come through the finish funnel that have in fact walked, because I just know from experience, I've done the walk with a few patients and they just don't want the token, if that makes sense, at the end.
And that's absolutely fine as well, Hussein.
Yeah, totally, of course it is.
Participate in a way that they feel comfortable with, and that's absolutely fine. Our objective is just to encourage people to be more active, to be outdoors, and to connect with their community.
So, if you could wish for something from the, you know, healthcare community in the UK, of course, it's going to be signposting to Parkrun, etc. But would you say that we could support increasing the number of people attending in different ways? For example, the walking, the volunteering. Is that where you see our strength being, or are we there for pretty much everyone?
As a health and wellbeing charity, we realize that we can achieve our mission by focusing on those who have most to gain from participation. So those with with health conditions, those that are less active, who are currently sedentary. We need to focus on engaging those people in part run in whatever way suits them. If they feel capable of running, come along and run. If they would like to walk, then come along and walk. If they would prefer to volunteer, then that opportunity is there. So I think making clear to patients that parkrun can be whatever it is they want it to be, that it is a free, accessible space where they can pursue their own health and well-being objectives. So I think that's the most important thing, that healthcare professionals are aware of the range of different ways that you can get involved in parkrun, and hopefully that they can advocate for that with their patients, but also take part.
Absolutely.
Themselves.
Because you want to get the benefit for yourself as well, you know, at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, where do you see parkrun going? Sort of in, let's say, 5, 10, 15 years' time, like, where do you see it sort of being placed in terms of its health and well-being role?
So parkrun is an incredibly ambitious organisation. And if we look at how far we've come since that first event in Bushy Park in 2004, you know, it's difficult to predict what the parkrun world will look like 20 years down the line. But we've already made great inroads into being able to diversify our participation. And that's my objective as head of health and well-being, is to engage more people, a wider variety of people, more often in parkrun events, not just in the UK, but around the world. But we can't do that alone, and it requires collaboration, and it requires partnerships, and it requires utilizing a range of channels to be able to promote parkrun to those that would benefit most. So I would like to see in the next 5 years us deepening our efforts in that area, that we manage to engage, like I said, a wider variety of people in our events, and obviously expand our footprint globally as well, so that we not only grow in the territories that we're already in, but we also expand into new territories. But, you know, our work has only just begun, really. I think we're only just scratching the surface in terms of what we can achieve. And we're already having an absolutely phenomenal impact with the kind of 300,000 people that take part every weekend. And I think if we work collaboratively and collectively, especially with public health, then I think we can make we can have a phenomenal impact on the health and well-being at a, not just an individual level, but a population level.
Very excited to hear that. Hopefully we'll be going to further, you know, countries across the world. I based my holidays and hotel locations on where the nearest parkrun is. So that's good to know that I've got more options going forward, touch wood. Okay. Now, a question that I ask all guests that come on this podcast is around how they see physical activity moving in the future. Compared to the 1960s, we are 20% less active, okay? Now, in 20 years' time, do you see the UK being more active, less active, or about the same as we are now?
I'm an optimist by nature. I am struggling to be optimistic outside of a parkrun context about the levels of physical activity. The trends are not promising, and I we are engineering activity out of people's lives at a really worrying rate, especially amongst our children. And so I think we need a cross-sectoral collaborative approach to really address the declining levels of physical activity. And it's going to take will at all levels to be able to turn the tide. You know, our daughter is 7 and I see the way in which activity is being kind of deprioritized.
Cancelled for other things, yeah. You
know, academic literacy is trumping physical literacy, you know, across the board. And her school is relatively progressive in that regard, but it's, you know, it's really sad and shocking. So I think we need to re-engineer activity into every aspect of our life, but, you know, through education or the depletion of green space, or, you know, the rise in technology that's not necessarily being used to, you know, stimulate activity. There's a lot of things to be concerned about. However, I feel that with interventions like Parkrun on the table, that we can be a counter to some of those broader kind of structural challenges. But like I said, it will take collaboration. So I think in answer to your question, I am going to try to be optimistic, and I want to be able to look back and think that I played a part, a very small part, in being able to, A, shift the narrative around what it means to be active. It's not just about sport. It's a lot more spacious than that. But also that I played a part in being able to encourage people to take steps towards healthier, active lifestyles. So does that sound like I'm sitting on the fence, Hussein? Maybe it does.
A little. No. I think it's pretty honest. I think you're absolutely right. You touched on the key things that are just so structural. They're so embedded at the moment in society that, you know, no matter how incredible initiatives like Parkrun and some of the other things out there, you can't battle some of them without, as you said, cross-sectoral support. There has to be the will to engineer it back in, because when you engineer something out, it's very effective at removing it. You know, these initiatives are brilliant at encouraging it, but essentially when you engineer it out, you force it out. So no, I think that's a fair reflection.
Yeah, I think the priority has to be children and young people, and the focus there. For me, you know, junior part run, growing junior part run here in the UK, we have just secured a £1.1 million grant from the London Marathon Foundation to grow junior part run. And really that's a, you know, a phenomenal opportunity to embed kind of regular movement in the lives of children, not only children but their families. So
because parents can run it with them, isn't it? It's not like the kids go on their own. The kids can if they like to, but they can be accompanied by their parents. And brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we've seen is the parents that walk or run with their children are again taking some of their first steps towards being active. So, you know, they're accompanying little Johnny or Jane and kind of walking, jogging around with them. And almost subconsciously, they're embarking on their own activity journey and then segue into Parkrun. So that's a great opportunity to encourage that intergenerational activity, but with a focus, obviously, on children and young people.
Thank you so much for, you know, giving us your time, outlining Parkrun and the Parkrun Praxis Initiative. We'd love to have you back, because often we do get questions and comments after the podcast, and maybe we can do like a Q&A podcast in the future. where we can, you know, get people's input from that. But thank you so much.
Thank you. And there's so much great work happening. I don't want to finish on a kind of pessimistic note. Just your anecdote about Leamington, you know, should remind people that there's some phenomenal work happening. And I think we also need to celebrate that and find ways to scale that up.
Absolutely. Like, I think the key positive is that, you know, we are needed at the end of the day. We are extremely needed, and healthcare plays such an important role. And when Sport England did research looking at like what kind of professionals did people want to hear physical activity advice from, healthcare professionals were at the top. They were the most trusted. So we can have an impact for people to make changes. And the most interesting piece of research was that to encourage someone to stop smoking, you'd have to speak to between 120 to 150 people for one person to successfully stop smoking. Mm-hmm. To increase someone's physical activity levels by an amount that is significant for their health, you only have to speak to somewhere between 8 to 12. Okay, that is good. You know, that's really good. And not many of us pass up an opportunity to encourage smoking cessation, but I think we do often sometimes not open the door of physical activity all the time. And we should, because patients do listen.
Yeah, absolutely. And also repositioning it, not as activity, but also as connection, you know, just, you know, being part of something, feeling like you're belonging. And I think we all need that.
We all need that, 100%. Absolutely. Well, anyway, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And all the best.
Thank you. Take care.
So that's all we've got time for today from the incredible Chrissy talking about parkrun. Now, if this has inspired you, I'd really recommend going to your local event. You can go on the parkrun website to register if you haven't already. And go to either the Saturday 5 kilometer event or the Sunday junior park run. This is where children 14 and below with their parents or family member can engage with some movement. It's 2 kilometers, and often I find it's a great gateway for both the child to become physically literate, but also for the parents to get some activity at the same time. If you want to find out more about the park run practice, please visit the Royal College website. And if you want to know more about some of the things that park run are doing, please follow their social media channels. Thank you again for listening, and please spread the word that movement is medicine. Thank you.